Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Ken Levitt, who just wrapped up his tenure as Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, ending a decades-long journalism career. Levitt is now VP for Communications and Albany Director at Metropolitan Public Strategies, otherwise known as MPS. Ken Levitt is, of course, a guy who everybody who listens to WAMC knows. He's been more than gracious, more than giving in talking to us again and again about inside politics in Albany, and frankly, knows more about it than anybody else that I know. He's an extraordinary man, and welcome, Ken. First of all, why did you do it?
I just think it was time after so many years, 30 plus years in the business, and you know, journalism is changing right now, and the industry is heading in a different direction. Where, we don't know yet. It hasn't shaken out, but certainly the future for print is not very exciting at this point. And I just thought it was a good time to make the move. I found something that excited me and just decided to do it.
Now, in the business, it's not unusual to hear that when reporters leave, they go and they join what we sometimes call the dark side. They go to the dark side and they get a lot more money for doing it. But sometimes it's a tough transition. Are you worried about that?
You know, it's only been a couple of days, but it feels more comfortable than I thought it was, it would be. And I thought it would be a little more bittersweet for me. But, you know, a couple of things that really have struck me as, you know, as I've been going through it. One is, as I said, I've been doing this for 30 years and plus. And when I started...
You don't even look like a 30 year old.
And when I started, thank you, I had really set some goals for myself. I wanted to work for a New York City paper. I got to work for two. I wanted to cover a good government beat. I got to do that. And I wanted to make a mark. And, you know, in my own way, I feel I have.
You certainly have. Rather than let you say it, I'm going to say it. Nobody has more respect than you do.
I appreciate that. And so in that regard, there's no regrets. There's no, I wish I got to do X, Y, and Z. I did what I wanted to do. I always thought I'd retire in the field, but, you know, it's becoming more and more clear that wasn't going to happen. So to be able to go out on my own terms was important, to be able to find something that excited me rather than have to accept something because I got laid off in a year or two. It just all made sense that the timing was right for that reason.
So will you, you know, use your skills that you have honed as the best of the reporters in your new job with, frankly, a PR firm?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just from the different side. And so, you know, they deal with a lot of issues at Metropolitan Public Strategy. So,
What is it?
So it is a it's a consulting firm that has corporate, nonprofit, and political clients in both New York and Florida, and they run a lot of issue based campaigns. So, for instance, one of their clients is the New York Immigration Council, and this year a big issue is whether undocumented immigrants should get driver's license. So, you know, we're involved with that. So, rather than reporting on it, I'll be pushing issues on it. You know, different ideas and things like that.
Will you have to go to the legislators who you covered?
No, I won't be lobbying. I'm not a lobbyist, but, you know, to come up with ideas, to write, maybe in some cases for clients, I may be a spokesman if they need it, or write an op-ed, or whatever it is. I think it'll be issue-based. So in that regard, I'll get to use my journalism skills, and I'll get to focus on issues that are very interesting.
Did they tell you when they hired you why they wanted you?
I think, look, you know, it's been a long career, and I know a lot of what goes on in government, and I think they want to tap into that experience.
Right. What if they tell you to do something you don't want to do?
I have always had a set of ethics that I don't see giving up on.
And you don't think they'll do that?
No, of course not. I wouldn't have gone to a firm where I thought that was a possibility or where I feared that. You know, it's never been about money for me. You know, otherwise I could have, you know, gone corporate a long time ago. This is something, they deal with a lot of interesting issues. I know the people for a long time, and I just think it's going to be exciting. And I don't think I'll have to compromise my ethics.
I heard that the firm is, as you said, both in New York and Florida. I hope that you'll be able to get down to Florida, particularly in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, that would be nice, right? I hope so, too. It's going to be interesting. You know, there's certain things I'm very excited about. Not being a slave to the legislative calendar is going to be nice,
where
I can't vacation between January and June. So now that's a little less restrictive for me. But I think it's an exciting time. And not a lot of people get to change fields, as my new boss said, in the third quarter. I prefer the late second quarter, but he said third quarter, and it's true. To be able to go and be excited about something, and it's been difficult. Journalism has been a difficult grind the last few years, with layoffs, with downsizing, with just the lack.
Daily News is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the Daily News is really downsized.
Well, the Daily News, but not just the Daily News. It's, when I got to Albany in 94 for Ottawa News Service, which is now defunct, by the way,
sure.
There are now 8 news organizations, local papers, that used to cover the Capitol that no longer do, from the Watertown Times, the Syracuse papers, the Troy and Schenectady, Troy Records Schenectady.
Well, they have me.
But my point is that there's been a loss of coverage of the state capitol.
Sure.
Why does that matter? Certainly AP covers stuff. Certainly the Times and the big papers cover things. But what the local papers brought was local coverage. And so there were issues. Like when I worked for Ottawa, that was for the Middletown Times Herald Record, the Oneonta Daily Star, and the Plattsburgh Press Republican. And we didn't do necessarily the story of the day. We looked for stories that were of interest to our region. So dairy pricing, SUNY. Casino gambling, all those kinds of things were interesting issues for our readers, but didn't necessarily get the day-to-day coverage from the bigger outlets. When you lose those papers, I think you lose a lot of that local coverage because they've been replaced with online. You know, you've got a lot of Politico people, you've got city and state. So it's not like there's not coverage, but they are often looking at the political side of things and even issues, but they're not looking at it from a local perspective that the other papers brought and no longer are there doing.
Well, you know, Ken, when I was a younger man, I used to put out something called the Chartock Report.
Mm-hmm.
I had, I don't know how many people, maybe I'm making this up, maybe 500 subscribers to the Chartock Report, which the money didn't come to me, came to the radio station. But my sense of it is that there isn't that large an audience that hones in on what's going on in Albany. There's a community, all right, and that 500 is probably still that 500.
I don't disagree, and I think that's a sad thing because in so many ways, state government plays such a big role in people's lives. And, one of the things, I did a farewell column, and one of the things I said, with all the cynicism, there's two things that really stand out to me. You couldn't do, I've covered the Capitol now 25 years, and you couldn't do it, even as cynical as we get and all the stuff we see, if you didn't think there's some good that could be had. And I talked about in that column two incidents. One was after same-sex marriage passed in 2011, a couple months later, I was in the elevator going home at the Capitol, and this group of well-dressed people came in, and they were laughing, and I said, oh, what's going on? They said, we're getting married. I said, oh, wow, where are you from? They said, Wisconsin. I said, what are you doing getting married in Albany? And they looked at me, and they said, we can't get married in our state. And I went, oh, and I realized how important, that really hit home how important the vote was. And more recently, I had covered for years the Child Victims Act, making it easier for victims of child sex abuse to seek justice as adults, giving them more time to bring cases. And, it finally passed in February. And the day of its passage, I had so many people, victims, survivors, come up to me, some with tears in their eyes, saying, thank you to the Daily News for the coverage. Thank you, thank you. And so those two things really, to me, or why we do this, that, you know, that Albany does matter in people's lives. And we get so caught up on, you know, who's screwing who over, what the issues are, politics, you know, but it really does. There are a lot of important things that can and do get done.
So, Ken Lovett, let's talk about the big story this year, and that is the New York State Senate goes Democratic. Cuomo claims credit for it, but now I'm giving you a wide berth here. But now the Senate and the governor seem to be slightly at war, the very Democratic Senate, which he always worried about. He was always worried that if the Republicans weren't there, he couldn't be the navigator of what was going on. What do you make of it all?
Well, I think it's not surprising. As you said, the governor, you know, his father always liked having a Republican Senate because when they would block things that he really didn't want to do, he could just blame them. And the difference was, at the time, he had a strong majority of Republicans in the Senate. So with the governor, first he had the Republicans, then he had the Independent Democratic Conference, you know, the group of eight breakaway Democrats. And
the traitors.
So he used them to block things that he didn't really want to get done. Now, even since the election, he's been on your show multiple times, numerous times since the election, saying, oh, we'll see, because the Long Island and the suburban Democrats, they've got their own interests. And he was kind of driving a wedge anyway. But the collapse of the Amazon deal really made it open warfare between him and the Senate Dems, particularly Mike Gianaris, the deputy leader.
Now, I'm a big Gianaris fan, I'll be honest with you, but I think he was wrong on this. I personally think he's wrong. I think that a lot of jobs get lost from New York, and AOC, Cortez, is also in the forefront of this. How's it play out?
Well, this was all a direct result of Ocasio-Cortez's election and her defeat of Joe Crowley in Queens, the longtime Republican congressional incumbent. She beat a powerful man. Gianaris was very close to Crowley. Very close. And in his history in the legislature, Gianaris was not a liberal Democrat. He was considered a moderate Democrat in Queens. But he read the tea leaves. He knew that, you know, with her victory, this could impact him moving forward. So he quickly swung left. And this is a guy who wrote a letter, signed on to a letter a while back saying, Amazon, come to New York. We'll love to have you. And then after Ocasio-Cortez, once New York got awarded, it was all about the subsidies. And he the problem was he never had an end game. I wrote a column about that about a month or two ago, that there was no end game in sight for him. It was just, you know, fighting Amazon. He refused to meet with them. So it was a little disingenuous when after they went away, he said, oh, you see, that shows they weren't going to be good neighbors. They wouldn't even talk to us. Well, you wouldn't talk to them. They wanted you to meet. You wouldn't. The governor was going to put you on a panel for community relations. You refused. So I think, you know, he was doing his own internal local politics. The problem was the rest of the Senate Democrats kind of deferred to him. And I don't think anyone expected Amazon to take their ball and go home. And so, you know, Andrea Stewart-Cousins appointed Gianaris to this board that will have power over the deal. And that really upset Amazon. And
you say nothing about upsetting the governor.
Yeah, and the thing is, it wasn't even a real appointment in the sense that, because the governor had to sign off on it, they fully expected the governor was going to reject it, the Gianaris nomination.
Yeah.
And then Gianaris can run back to the district and say, I tried, I fought it, the governor blocked me, and then the project might go through. The problem was, you know, the Long Island Democrats who supported it deferred, so really publicly they tepidly said they support the project, but they didn't say it loudly. Andrea Stewart-Cousins also was very tepid in her public statements on Amazon, which was a big difference than when Gianaris introduced a bill that would raise taxes on the wealthy in New York City to pay for subway repairs. When he did that, Andrea Stewart-Cousins' spokesman came out and said, it's just one bill. The leader has made it clear we are not interested in raising taxes. She could have done that for Amazon. She could have said, look, the deputy leader, you know, he has his own views on this, but we welcome Amazon. So I think they misread the situation. They were playing to Gianaris' local politics, and it blew up in their faces, and it hurt the governor, it hurt the mayor of New York, because they were embarrassed.
They screwed up.
Yeah,
the governor, of course, has been lying low. He was calling into our show 15 weeks in a row or something like that. We can't find him right now. He knows lying low is probably a very good idea. So now, when the Democrats got elected, I have a real theory on why all this happened, because obviously the Democrats, Trump was the issue. The Democrats go rolling in. Cuomo wants to be president, whether he says it or not. He doesn't want to be seen as the guy who kept the Republicans in power all this time. And so they get elected and they get the majority. And I remember saying, probably to you, but to everybody else who would listen, watch, they'll screw it up. The Democrats will form the usual circular firing squad and start to kill each other. Now, in 2021, I believe, there's going to be a gerrymander of the legislature, or a redistricting, we want to put it nicely. And the Democrats have everything to lose by not being in control of their house at the time. And I think they're screwing it up.
I think it's a good thing for the Democrats that this happened in February of 2019 and not February of 2020, because that's an election year. And I think that they have time to right the ship. The problem is they had a really good first month. They were riding high.
You bet.
And the problem with the Amazon deal, even if you buy into the argument that it wasn't just that, that there were other factors that led Amazon to leave, it plays into a narrative that the Republicans, particularly on Long Island, where they picked up a lot of seats, you know, the Democrats now control 6 out of 9 seats on Long Island. The Republicans now will use the narrative that they're anti-business. They're going to tie the Senate Dems to the New York City liberal agenda, quote unquote, to Ocasio-Cortez. And so they basically gave them that issue. And then at the same time, they've been arguing about, they've been pushing an idea, some have, about raising the minimum wage for prisoners. So the Republicans are like, so let me get this straight. You care more about raising the minimum wage for inmates than you do about $140,000 average jobs for, you know, regular middle-class people. It plays into a narrative, rightly or wrongly, fairly or not, that the Democrats were hoping to avoid, which they got tarred with in 2009 and 10, rightfully, and they were looking to repair that. And this really just plays in. It's a setback.
You've been around for a while, Ken. Have the Democrats screwed it up? Shouldn't the Democrats and the governor be playing nice with each other right now rather than going into this kind of war?
Yeah, they should. And, you know, even the first month when they were doing all these things, I kept calling it the double J's, jubilation and jockeying, because there was jubilation that all these things that got done that had been blocked by the Republicans for years and years were finally getting done. So there's a lot of celebration. But jockeying, because the governor kept trying to get credit and the legislature tried to get credit. And rather than working together and holding joint press conferences, you know, the legislature would schedule a press conference for 10 o'clock with advocates. And the governor would then schedule one for 9:30 at the, you know, with the same advocates. And they were just jockeying for attention and credit. And for the governor, who really controlled Albany for the first, you know, 8 years, for his first two terms, this is brand new because the legislature is moving on without him.
You bet. Let me switch subjects and talk to you about Tish James as AG, Attorney General. In the beginning, she got sort of tarnished by me as well as others as being the Cuomo person. How is she doing? I see that she's attacking Trump left and right, and it's very safe for a New York politician. But what's the relationship with the governor and the legislature been like?
Well, with Tish James, I would say there's been a lot of people have said, where is she? I know she just signed on to this lawsuit, against California. Trump with 16 attorneys general trying to stop this emergency
order.
That's safe
for her.
That is safe for her. And but a lot of people, former members of the attorney general's office, have said to me, she's not hit the ground running. They want to know what she's doing. Now, look, it's only February of 2019. It's a 4-year term, but she's certainly been laying low, and she certainly hasn't yet shown her cards of what she's going to focus on other than Trump. As far as the governor and the legislature and her relationship, I haven't seen it yet. She hasn't been around. She hasn't done much. The governor and the legislature, there's problems. You know, Carl Hastie is extremely angry still at the governor and at the comptroller.
Boss Hastie.
And, he's upset over the pay raise and how that went down. The fact that a commission tied various reforms, including the end of what's known as Lulu's legislative stipends for most of them, and also tying it to on-time budgets, which they agreed to in the legislation. So he got outplayed on that, and he's mad at the governor. So he'll work with the governor, but he won't help the governor. If the governor calls him and needs anything, he's just not going to do it.
Wow. So Hasty is the head of his house, and obviously Cousins is the head of her house. They like each other, right? They get along with each other.
They do. They do. Look, there's going to be issues, but they won't be. They shouldn't be personal. So the Senate has its own internal politics where you've got a big faction, 15 members who have come from outside the city. So that's a big out of 39, 15. So they don't want to go as progressive on certain things. So when we talked about Amazon, I think one of the fallouts is going to be, and we'll see, they were hoping to do a criminal justice package. They're on break this week, but they come back next week, and they were hoping to do a criminal justice package. I would not be surprised if that's put off for weeks or even months. Maybe it's in the budget. Maybe it's after the budget. But I think now the Long Island Democrats are scared because they're being tarred with being anti-business. They're going to need things. They have to move away, at least for a while, from the New York City liberal agenda. So they were already having some issues with the Assembly over what this criminal justice package should look like. Because the Assembly wanted a much more liberal package, and Senate Democrats were trying to pull it back a little. But now I think it's going to be even harder because the Long Islanders are really afraid that the Amazon thing could blow up in their face. And so I think criminal justice reform could be something that is put on the back burner for a while.
Ken Levitt, former longtime bureau chief of the New York Daily News, making me cry just even reading that.
Hearing it.
I guess I want to ask you about the fact that the governor's come up a little short on his budget, $2.3 billion. He's been trying to attach the president to that because of SALT, the state and local tax deduction, which we no longer have in my state of Massachusetts, your state of New York. So is this chump change, $2.3 billion, or where's it going to come from?
Well, that's going to be the budget negotiations. You have a legislature that wants to spend a lot more money, especially on education, on health care, and the governor now has revised. He put in a $176 billion, almost $175 billion budget proposal in January that would have increased health care spending and education spending by about 4%. He now took away that health care increase. He would cut Medicaid by $500 million in his budget amendments to address this. He wants to close prisons. He wants to do some other things. So money's going to be tight, and it's going to be interesting to see because don't forget the governor has a self-imposed 2% cap on state spending.
Sure.
Now, some will argue that he gets around it and with gimmicks, but either way, he's been restricting spending. And it's going to be interesting to see if the legislature abides by that or whether they're going to want to raise taxes or they're going to want to find some way to drive revenue so they can increase spending to schools and increase spending to health care while at the same time closing this budget deficit.
But they did agree, did they not, on the basis of their pay raise, that they would have an on-time budget?
They did. Governor holds a lot of cards because if it's late, they lose $10,000 next year because they already got the first phase of the pay raise. It's a three-year phase in. So they went up to $110,000 from $79,500 base salary, and now they're due to go up another $10,000 next year and another $10,000 the year after. If the budget's late, they lose that second $10,000. So he's got a lot of leverage over them.
Only got a minute, but one thing is really puzzling me, and that what is Gillibrand out there doing the presidential thing? She can't win, can she?
Who knows? You know, we sat here. How many times did we sit here and go, Trump can't win?
I don't think it's the same thing. She's not showing a lot.
No, but she is someone who has always been very ambitious. You know,
that's true.
But in a Democratic primary, you're going to hear all about her flip-flopping, and you're going to hear about you were pro-gun, and now you're pro-gun control. You were pro-anti-immigration reform. Now you're pro-immigration reform. So she's going to have to answer to a lot of that.
When you look at the way in which this is all working out now, and you compare this governor to Pataki, who also served three terms, or to Spitzer, who hardly was a blip on the screen, what do you make of these governors?
I think Andrew Cuomo is probably the most difficult governor I covered, but also the most successful one.
We're delighted that you've been on with us, Ken, and we certainly invite you back as one of the most important and influential voices who have covered the legislature and who will continue to keep a sharp eye on it. If you're allowed to come back, I hope you will.
I am. I will when invited.
And you will be invited. So thank you so much for joining us.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.